Turkish Sky Broadcasting presents The Weatherman, starring Nicolas Cage as David Spritz and Michael Caine as Robert Spritzel, voiced by Neville Watchhurst on behalf of MCS Agency. Through fluffy white clouds, the stars of the Paramount logo stream out and surround a rocky, snow-clad mountain peak. The figure of a running man is backlit by a large blue eye. Beneath this, in block capitals, appear the words, Escape Artists. A thick layer of ice shards resembling pale blue rose petals rise and fall on the tide. The body of water is revealed to be some kind of harbour, dominated by a soaring skyline. The headlamps of cars move along the waterfront. In an uncluttered apartment, the bathroom door stands open. The rather lugubrious face of David Spritz rises up as if from the basin.
That was refreshing. I'm refreshed. I'm refreshing.
Having broken briefly into a startlingly toothy smile, David's face reverts to a kind of weary inscrutability. Jaunty graphics in primary colours announce Hello America with Bryant Gumbel. Beneath studio lights, a male and a female newscaster sit clutching coffee mugs and chatting with studied ease as the camera homes in on them.
Welcome back. I'm Bryant Gumbel.
And I'm Ann Howard.
Good stuff today.
We're going to be busy.
We've got pop superstar Elton John. He's going to be with us, and so too will best-selling author Al Franken.
Along with some super smart fourth graders with a great idea for getting school books to kids who really need them.
But here's an idea whose time has come. Why don't we just start with...
David Spritz pours himself a coffee as the TV plays in the background. He goes to the high picture window of his apartment.
Okay. You put some ice cream on our angel food cake, and I finish my burger as much as you like.
Spritz moves around the apartment, practicing arm gestures as if for some kind of demonstration or presentation. Far below, the hectic streets are teeming with cars. The mantelpiece is crowded with family photos, including one of David shoulder to shoulder with a teenage boy.
Did they call? Someone from the show. The Gumbel Show. They didn't call? Are you sure?
Once again, we're out of time.
Thank you already.
We still got lots more ahead this morning. We're going to be back with Al Franken.
David Spritz walks out through a revolving door and onto the street. He picks up a ticket from under the wiper blade of a car. He stares with apparent resentment at the printed words City of Chicago Violation Notice and the handwritten scribble about expired tags. In a bleak municipal office, David queues in front of a sign reading Title and Registration. Behind him, a chubby man peers smilingly over his shoulder.
What's up, dude?
What's up?
Hey, can I get your autograph?
I'm not who you think I am, so...
You're not the weather guy? Dan Spritz?
Dave Spritz. I'm not Dave Spritz, no. But I hear that a lot.
The chubby man notes the form Spritz is clutching with his name clearly marked on it. He sneers as if in disappointment.
You don't have to be a dick.
Look, can you just... All right, I'm just waiting in line.
Bro, I can read your vehicle registration form, so whatever.
Can you... All right, can you give me a break? I just wanted to wait in line.
You're on TV, bro. You're on TV. You're on TV, bro.
So what? You keep saying that.
So you're on TV, bro. Go work in a bank or something if you don't want to be cool to people.
Whatever. Just, can you get out of my face? Can you get out of my face?
Asshole.
You want to say that to my face?
Thought you wanted me to get out of your face.
People recognize me sometimes. Some are dicks.
This is the same system that created those strong snowfalls in Minnesota. It's met some slightly warmer weather.
I should cool out a little, I guess. I mean, I'm not just this two-dimensional guy they recognize. I do have a relationship to them. I let them know what they have to deal with.
But listen, these warmer temperatures are not going to last. This wind system will keep pushing colder air across the Midwest.
I guess that's why they think they know me. But they don't really.
Our Sprint Snipper of the Week with a high of just 24.
I'm not a hill of beans. I have a plan.
Okay, see you then. What's this afternoon?
You're picking up Shelly.
Where?
Chicago Dance. Then you're taking your dad to Northwestern.
At 3?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you have that Hello America stuff?
The letter?
Yeah.
You have Mike, too, 5:30 at the Norris House.
Okay.
Spritz edges his car up to the curb as a commuter train rattles past. He peers out. A line of sylph-like young girls in ballet gear trot along the icy pavement in front of the wide windows of the dance studio. In the window stands an ungainly girl who slowly and unsmilingly returns David's wave.
Do they have my cell phone? Well, they should have all the numbers in case. And am I supposed to call that guy Dearson? Didn't he want me to call to touch base? Okay.
Dad, can we stop here?
What for?
I need a notebook for school. I'll just walk home.
Okay.
Can I have some money?
You don't have any?
No.
You're 12 years old. You shouldn't be walking around without money, okay, Shelly? You're not a kid. How's your mom doing?
She's good.
Spritz watches as the dumpy girl walks through the light snow towards the mini-mart. He pulls away.
Can I have a pack of lights?
Regulars?
The 100s.
The shopkeeper fetches the cigarettes and slides them across the counter.
Strikes?
Spritz pulls up to a curb. He looks up towards the first floor window of a rather gloomy brownstone house. He takes a letter from an envelope in his pocket and smooths it out onto the passenger seat. Gilt-framed photographs show a curly-haired man at various ages in the company of a range of famous people, including Jimmy Carter and Anwar Sadat. Spritz picks up a glass award, the 1967 Pulitzer Prize for Literature given to Robert King Spritzel. An older woman tidies the room.
How's Shelley?
She's doing great.
Little angel.
Yeah, she's doing great.
Who's an angel?
Shelley.
Shelley is grossly overweight and unhappy. I'm concerned about her, as I am Michael. David?
Yeah, Dad.
David throws a brief look towards the woman. She avoids his gaze and seems uncomfortable. David accompanies his father, dressed in an overcoat and gloves, out through the snow to his car. He seems slightly nervous as he solicitously opens the car door. His father slides down, crushing the letter David had left on the seat. David says nothing. The two men sit wordlessly beneath a clock which hangs on the otherwise bare wall of a bleak hospital waiting room. A young doctor appears at the doorway.
Robert Spritzel?
Both men rise. Spritzel turns to David.
Would you get me a paper for the way back, son?
Yeah. 15 minutes?
Yes. I'll see you then.
David slots a coin into a newspaper machine which slams shut before he can take one. He seems to have no more change.
Hey.
Hey.
It's getting cold.
Yeah.
What's the nipper this week?
Thursday.
Thursday's the nipper. All right.
The punter, delighted with his insider information, moves on. David continues searching his pockets. Then seeing the sign of a burger joint, he hurries off up the pavement. He reaches the head of the queue.
Yeah. Can I get some change?
Not really.
Can I just get some quarters? I just need a quarter for a paper.
Not really.
All right, I'll get something then.
David pulls his only dollar bill from his wallet.
All right. Small coffee.
It's 80 cents.
No, it says 72.
After it'll hold everything, it's 80.
David, clutching the coffee, awaits his father.
Hey.
Where's the paper, David?
I didn't have enough money.
You bought a coffee.
What?
You bought a coffee.
Yeah, that. And then I didn't have enough money. After.
What?
I didn't have enough money after I bought the coffee, so.
You should carry more than a dollar, David. You're a grown man.
Let me just move this letter from Hello America
David places the letter on the dashboard. His father sits looking fixedly forwards. Through the car window, David looks from the letter to his father as if willing him to look at it. Traffic lights change from green to red. Beneath the L train track, a line of cars pulls to a halt. David is at the head of the queue. He sips at his guilty coffee and casts a look over at the letter and at his father, who continues looking stonily forwards.
My father's Robert King Spritzel. He won the National Book Award when he was 28. And the Pulitzer when he was 33. President Carter called him a national treasure. They played racquetball in a regular game. He was a great writer. But what was the cost? Did he neglect his family? No, he didn't. He was a fine father. More than that, really.
It's fruitless for Shelley to be dancing. She should find another interest that would be more rewarding to her, that she can take more from, David.
We've talked about that.
Well, you should do something, son.
Well, we've tried a couple things. We'll keep trying, so.
How's Michael?
I think that was an overreaction on Noreen's part. I don't think he has a problem with the plot.
Let's hope. How's the weather business?
David seems delighted yet floored by this question. Traffic grinds to snowy gridlock. David sits in the midst of it.
Last September, I had encouraged Shelley to explore some other activities and interests. She picked archery. So I took her to an archery range in Bolingbroke. It was a 90-minute drive. We purchased a junior bow, arrow kit, and a leather wrist forearm guard.
Okay, we'll take that.
And private lessons.
A receipt for $170 is processed. A line of archers shoot. Shelley tentatively draws her bow and aims at the target.
Ow!
Right. Just remember, pull it straight back, parallel to your ear. Right. You can do it, Shelley.
Shelley screws her eyes up and draws the bow once again.
Ow!
We purchased a 5-pack lesson plan. We haven't been back.
David gazes up through his car windscreen at the flurries of snow overhead. He becomes aware that his mobile is ringing.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
Can you pick up Mike at the mall on North?
I thought he was at a friend's house, Paul Norris.
They went to the mall. He just called me. He finished his rehab.
Okay.
Two teenagers walk along a pavement. A tall man crosses the street.
That's one of my counselors.
In your program?
Don Bowden. He's pretty nice. He swears all the time, though.
Swears?
Yeah, to relate, I guess. But he's pretty nice.
The taller of the two boys, the same boy as in the photo in David Spritz's apartment, looks at clothes. The tall counselor spots him and approaches.
Hey.
Hey, Don.
What are you guys doing?
Looking for clothes.
You're just looking for clothes?
Yeah.
That's great. I'm looking for clothes.
Okay. This is Paul.
What's up?
Hey.
It's cold today.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
What is it, like 20 or something?
Yeah, like 22.
Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, I like this.
It's good looking.
Yeah, I've been looking for something like this.
Chuck it in here.
What?
Chuck it in. I'm loading up. I got a discount card. I'll get it for you.
That's all right.
Mike, big deal.
I can get it.
Bro, I got a serious discount. It's gonna cost like $7.
All right, I'm gonna take off. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Oh, that's my dad. I'll see you later.
Sure. I'll catch you later.
Michael leaves the counselor standing alone on the pavement and crosses to David's car. Spritz watches the counselor walk away. Michael climbs in.
Hey. Hey. Who's that?
Don Bowden.
Who's Don Bowden?
He's one of my counselors.
Oh. That's a nice sweater.
Thanks.
David pulls up by the snow-covered verge in a residential street of generously proportioned houses. On the grass in front of a particularly large and beautiful brick house, a woman is picking up a red plastic box. David sees her and gets out purposefully.
I'll walk you up. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for getting Mike. Hey, how was your thing?
It was good. I'll see you, Dad.
Okay, Mike. I think he's gonna be okay.
Well, we'll see.
David gazes at her as if in hope of something.
What's new?
Nothing much. I got a feeler from Hello America.
What?
I got a feeler. Dale's just leaving it. I might get called to audition.
New York.
If I get called.
It's good. What about the kids?
It's just a shot in the dark, that's all.
Well, thanks for getting Mike.
I had to take my dad to Northwestern for a test, so yeah, I was right there anyway.
Was he okay?
I think so. It was just a test.
She turns and heads towards the house. David searches around for a diversion and decides to throw a snowball.
Noreen!
Ow!
Are you okay?
Yeah. Fuck, what are you doing?
I was just... You turned into it.
I think you cracked the glass.
She disappears inside, leaving the hapless David gaping after her. He finally turns back to his car, a forlorn figure in a billowing trench coat. Back in the city, David gets out of his car with his phone to his ear.
So, do you have everything you need?
Yeah, we got everything. We'll pare it down to 3 applicants after we watch the tapes. We'll call if you're one, Dave.
Okay, Mark. It's nice to make your acquaintance.
You too.
Hey, weatherman!
Fuck!
A passing van driver throws a quart of brown goo onto David's shoulder.
Fuck!
David?
Hey.
What happened?
I got hit with a Frosty.
Why?
What?
Why did you get hit with a Frosty? What is a Frosty?
A Frosty's a shake from Wendy's.
Why would someone throw a shake at you?
That happens sometimes.
People throw shakes at you?
Stuff. People throw stuff at me sometimes. If they don't like me or something.
They don't know you.
From TV.
But you just read the weather.
Well, I predict it.
You don't have a degree in meteorology.
I make suppositions, or I... What are you doing?
I walked over.
Walked? It's freezing.
I have lymphoma, David.
What?
I have lymphoma. Dr. Pritchcock. I was having tremors. That's the reason I went in. Pritch read my scans.
What's the prognosis?
It's not good. We'll talk about it this week. I wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
I'll call you after I've talked to Pritch again.
Well, I'll drive you home.
I like the fresh air.
Well, I'll walk back with you.
No, that's okay.
Fair.
His father, as if keen to be anywhere but with him, leaves David standing alone on the sidewalk. David looks down at the hideous guck sliding down his lapel and picks out from it a plastic spoon which he clutches as though he'd like to use it as a weapon. In the bathroom of his apartment, David sponges the Frosty from his coat.
Every couple months, someone throws something at me. A shake, a burrito once. Why? My name partly, I guess. I changed it for professional reasons. My first station manager suggested it. He said it sounded refreshing and that they wanted that quality. That may be true, but it's also annoying. I know that.
What kind of name is Spritz? It's a bullshit name. It's a TV name. He's bullshit.
Well, I like him. He's handsome.
He's an asshole. I don't like his face. His asshole face.
In the busy newsroom.
The other thing, my job's very easy. 2 hours a day, basically reading prompts. A make $240,000 a year, plus appearances, which are, you know, not comfortable for me, but lucrative.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent.
David is got up in a stovepipe hat and Abe Lincoln beard. He eyes a very pretty waitress.
Also, it makes other things easy, being on TV. Everything's easy.
The waitress is now on top of David, whose beard is askew.
I receive a large reward for pretty much zero effort and contribution. The shakes and stuff are a reaction to that, I think.
David stands looking wearily at himself in the bathroom mirror. He walks slowly out and into the living room where he stares at a framed picture. He picks it up. It is of his father as a young naval officer.
What must you think of me? Your family leader. Your non-meteorologist, yet weatherman, frosty-taking, fuck-happy son. Don't die yet, Robert. Give me time to get it together. Give me a little while. Let me get the Hello America job. I can get it together.
David gives the picture a wistful little smile and then replaces it with huge care and deference on the mantelpiece. His ex-wife's elegant brick home stands framed by winter trees. A lone church spire stands amid the high-rise of downtown. A cinema frontage. David's son Michael approaches in the company of his counselor, Don.
Two for high water.
I got mine, Don.
Oh, it's cool, I got it.
Thanks.
Michael accepts his ticket and Don shepherds him inside. A large Labrador dog scavenges food from an overturned bin. Shelley and another girl sit on a low wall, both gazing vacantly into space. Shelley takes a long drag on her cigarette and then shares her thoughts.
Trish is a bitch. She's a little cunt. I hate that little cunt. I'd like to burn her.
David knocks at the front door of the elegant brick house. His gaze is taken by the comfortable interior. Noreen answers.
Hi.
Today's the company party. I thought I'd take the kids.
Oh. Mike is out.
Is Shelley's home?
She's walking Jackson.
Where do you want to take them?
The rink, WCH. Hey.
Hey. What?
People mill around. A banner reads, 7th Annual Family Winterfest. David walks with Shelley, both carrying skates.
Hey.
Hey, Tim.
I didn't know you were coming.
I always come to these. When I can. I have some time this week if you want to go back up to Bolingbrook.
What's in Bolingbrook?
Sportsman's. The archery range.
Okay.
Okay, you want to go?
Okay, I remember it.
Well, do you want to go back up?
Sometimes.
Shelley heads off onto the rink. David, bent over doing his laces up, notices nestling inside Shelley's bag a packet of cigarettes. She finds her feet on the ice.
What's going to happen?
What?
What are we going to do here?
Great stuff.
David seems to think better of mentioning the cigarettes and, pulling on a woolly hat, joins her on the ice.
Ladies and gentlemen, on your legs!
Let's go, Team Spritz!
Get set! Go!
David and Shelley take part in the three-legged race.
Keep up, Shell, come on.
Couples start to keel over. Shelley loses her balance and takes David down with her.
You should finish.
We're way last.
There's a lesson here. Let's finish.
Sure.
Hon, You can do it. You can finish, okay? I don't want you to quit. It's gonna mean a lot to Dad, okay? All right. Let's go. That's my girl. That's it. Good. I'm proud of you. Okay? Hey! That was great!
Ow.
Hun, you okay?
You sure made me finish. That was like 100 yards you made me go. I'm not a football jocker.
Back at Noreen's home.
What happened?
We got tangled up in the sack.
What happened?
She tore ACL.
These fucking crutches are too long.
What did you say?
Shelly! What were you doing?
It was a picnic.
And she tore something?
ACL, MCL.
Which?
Both.
Dave!
Well, we didn't go bungee jumping. It was a fucking potato sack race.
That's where she got it.
What?
Fucking this, fucking that.
No, I never said that around her.
Well, you don't know you have, Dave, because you don't pay attention.
Fuck that.
What?
Just fuck that, Noreen, you know?
Dave.
What?
Step back.
Step back?
Step back.
What are you talking about, Russ?
Russ.
Step back right now.
Fuck you right now.
Fuck you, Spritz.
Fuck you, fat asshole. Dildo.
David. What are you doing?
I'm talking to my wife. I'm talking to Noreen and this clown whose business this isn't.
You call me a dildo. It is my business, Spritz.
You are a dildo, pork fuck, porker.
Stop, son. Would you?
Why don't you go?
Why are you here? Are you okay?
I came to talk to Noreen.
Dave, come on. I will talk to you later.
Dave, what's going on, son?
Nothing. Just, why are you here anyway?
I came to talk to Noreen about an issue concerning Shelly.
Well, you can talk to me. I'm her parent, too. So, what?
Shelly dresses in clothing not appropriate for her. Clinging stuff.
All kids wear... Dad, it's a different generation.
They call her camel toe.
What?
Are you aware of that?
What?
That her colleagues call her camel toe.
What are you talking about?
It means the crease in her vagina that they can discern through her clothing.
What?
Camel toe.
I heard you. I mean, how do you know they do that?
I heard it. I picked Shelly up on Wednesday. Heard taunting, the older boys calling it.
You might have heard wrong.
No, I heard
camel. Okay, look, I'll deal. I want to get her through this ACL thing. I'm going to take her shooting. I'm going to reapply her there. I'm going to get her talking to me. I'm going to get to her. I'm going to work it out.
David's father nods, but without much conviction. David's car peels off from the main road and down a side street. He pulls over to wait for another driver to pull out of a parking place. He gazes out through the windscreen.
A camel toe is pretty much what Robert said it was. It's basically just when you can make out more than you should. But it's the kind of thing, she's 12, you know? If you're around and paying attention, you catch it. Then name-calling doesn't start. Then maybe smoking doesn't start. And maybe she can just stay a happy kid for a couple more years. She shouldn't be unhappy. Fuck. What did she ever do to anybody? Shelly.
David reaches for his phone and makes a call as he pulls into the parking space.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey.
Listen, Noreen, I was thinking.
This pushing and pulling, the tug of war we do sometimes.
It's not good for the kids.
It's not.
Noreen.
Let's see somebody. Work it out.
Fuck! Are you okay?
I got hit with a pop.
What?
A fucking... A big gulp.
Man. Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Okay, so, what I was saying...
See somebody?
We're going to begin with some trust-building exercises. The buddy drop. Up on your feet. Let's go. Dave, Noreen, center circle.
David and Noreen smile shyly and step forward.
Now, Noreen, you're just gonna let yourself go, and Dave is gonna catch you. Just go back. Yeah, cross your arms up front. Now, whenever you're ready. Okay. Oh! Very good. All right, Teresa, Mark, you're up. Okay. Now, I want you to name something that you did that affected your partner and that you're not proud of.
I had this thing with porno on the computer, sort of. I got a little preoccupied and...
Actually, I want you to write it down, not say it.
Okay.
I want you to put it on the paper that you got for a reason.
Okay.
Now, make sure it's something the other person doesn't know about, that they don't know.
David looks helplessly around the circle of earnest couples as they jot down their thoughts in yellow pads.
All right. Then you are going to give it to the other person. And the other person is never going to look at it. Ever. That's trust.
David, finally having thought of something, writes it down. The couples begin exchanging slips of paper. David and Noreen fold their pieces and hand them guardedly to each other. David stands in the washroom, hastily unfolding the piece of paper. One of the other men enters.
What's up?
David looks surreptitiously through the door into the therapy room and then moves over to the sinks, turning on the tap as cover. He unscrews the slip of yellow paper once again.
I thought Dave's science fiction novel or whatever it was stupid and sucked and was a waste of time. He was embarrassing. 4 years?
David's face darkens and puckers slightly as he absorbs this and masters his emotions. He smooths down his hair, straightens his collar, and heads back out. David and Noreen sit facing each other across a table in a deserted diner.
Well, I thought that went pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
David comes out of his reverie and goes to take a drink from his coffee cup, almost jabbing himself in the eye with the spoon standing in the cup. Noreen smiles almost fondly.
It wasn't science fiction, just so you know.
What?
It wasn't science fiction.
What are you
Did you even
about?
Read it? Well, no, one of the side characters was a scientist. No, no,
God damn it,
that's not
Dave,
even important.
God damn it!
What? I'm just asking, did you ever even read it?
Oh, it was hard to read. It was poorly written. You're an asshole, God. You are a champion, asshole. You're a real blue ribbon fuck.
She storms off. She gets out from his car.
I just want to make it work, Noreen. I just want to know everything so I can make it work. That's why I want to try again.
I'm not going back. You fucked it up.
I mean our marriage.
What?
He climbs the steps to stand close to her by her front door.
I want to try again.
Fuck you. You know, Dave, you can't even... You looked at it. That's dishonest. It's crappy.
Noreen.
Hey, should I look at yours?
That's all right. No. Noreen.
Throughout marriage... BJ's lacked enthusiasm, had difference of opinion over how important that was, I thought very. You know what, Dave? You want to know why my BJ's lacked enthusiasm? I hated you. I hated your hair. I hated your ugly legs, your forearms. I hated kissing your lips, Dave, okay? And that's why I lacked enthusiasm when your cock was in my mouth.
Shelley has appeared in the doorway.
Hey, hon.
Shelley, it's cold. Your father said it was going to be 65 degrees today, but...
Go ahead, I'll see you later.
How did it go?
Good. I'll call you tomorrow. Go ahead in.
Shelley manages a brief smile and goes back indoors. Dave again sits with his father beneath the wall clock in the Spartan hospital waiting room. Robert stares ahead of him, David casts around for a conversational gambit.
Did you start my novel yet?
What's that?
Breaking Point. Did you start that?
No, I haven't yet, so I've been preoccupied.
Well, that's good, actually. I want to make some changes, so I'll give you the new one.
Robert nods noncommittally, but his expression makes it clear that he'd rather do anything but read it. David comes through to find his father struggling to do up his buttons with shaking hands. He stops and looks challengingly at his son.
What do you say?
It's further bad news. The metastatic plane was too wired for radiation. He suggests I see Dr. Frost in New York for clinical trials.
David looks on helplessly as his father strides off down the corridor. On a busy freeway, David drives. Robert, as ever, stares straight ahead.
I got a feeler from Hello America. National. They're looking at 20 guys, but they'll be cutting down to 3 soon. It's a possibility. Salary's great. It's real strong. I didn't mean moving, but I'd like to move everybody, you know? Renew things with Noreen. We've been seeing somebody. You know, let the kids start over in New York. Keep them away from some of the bad influences here that... Just get a fresh start.
I think that would be great. That would be terrific.
Yeah.
You could rededicate yourselves. Knuckle down.
Robert's eye is caught by something on the floor of the car. He leans down and comes back up, holding the big gulp cup which had been hurled at David.
What's this?
It's a big gulp.
Robert scrutinizes the cup and looks back at David, more in sadness than in anger. A screen shows white swirls of weather fronts rotating jerkily.
You should say we might see some snow, but it might shift south, miss us.
I can say it, but I sort of want to understand it. Why is it?
Well, it's Canadian trade winds.
Behind all of it?
Yeah, this'll get pushed by wind out of Canada.
So what's it gonna do?
I don't know. It's a guess. It's wind, man. Blows all over the place.
For some reason, I don't know. I went back to Bolingbrook. I bought a 3-month lesson plan.
Hang on, before you do that, you know, let's go out here.
We warm up, then do basic focus drills. Stuff you never think about, like closing an eye without moving your face. Because your face is the anchor point for your hand that allows you to focus. You have to keep your triangle against a lot of force.
David has been taking coaching out in the snowy open air. He now stands observing a row of highly proficient archers shooting on an indoor range.
We do draws for a half hour, then releases. That's called loosing, when you release.
David is now shooting. His first arrow misses the target, but he perseveres. Outside in the snow, he aims at a target. This time, he succeeds in hitting the outer rings. He is delighted.
It's hard, but that one good shot leaves you thinking you might be catching on.
Do you lift weights?
What's that?
Do you lift weights?
Yeah.
Cardio?
Yeah, I have to do both.
Yeah. Are you on any kind of a program?
Yeah, our gym coach gave us a program.
That should be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know what'd be interesting?
What?
We should take some pictures, some shots, like some now, some in a month or whatever, see if you're making gains.
Yeah.
I got my mom's Nikon. Whip your shirt off.
Whip my shirt off?
Yeah.
Don looks imperiously at Michael. The boy, initially uncertain, removes his shirt and stands self-consciously in the middle of the kitchen. He tidies his hair and smiles gingerly at Don as the man returns with the camera.
You're shredded. This is great, man. We can compare this shit.
That's a Nikon FM?
Well, yeah. You know something about cameras?
Yeah, I took a class at Parker.
A couple more?
My dad's gonna get the F3 for me if I can finish the program and maintain a B average. It's like a $600 camera. I'm psyched about it.
I could loan that to you.
Yeah?
I could loan that shit to you if you wanted it earlier.
Okay.
Michael smiles shyly and they both start to eat. David fits Shelley with an archer's arm brace.
This is gonna go a lot better.
Why?
Because I got you some bobtail arrows. They're easier.
Why?
Well, they're thicker at the ends. See? They taper toward the nock.
What's the nock?
The arrow end.
What was I using before?
Chested arrows. That guy didn't know what he was doing.
Targets stand in the snow among trees.
Okay. Fletch it.
What?
Fix your arrow in. That's the term. Arrow makers were called fletchers. That's where the last name came from. Here. It's a little bit of a... It takes a little while. It's right there, right below the nock. There. Awesome. Okay, let's loose a few. Let's show our stuff. Aim about a half foot above.
Okay.
You wait till you're steady. Are you aligned?
Yeah.
Okay, let it go.
Fuck.
Come on, Shelly, get your arrow. We probably didn't home long enough. That's the pause between drawing back and firing. Let's pause a little longer. What?
Nothing.
Are you just not interested?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not interested, or yeah, you are interested?
Yeah, I'm not. Really.
David's face registers bewildered frustration.
What was it you liked? Let's think of it that way.
What?
What interested you when you thought about archery? When you wanted to do it?
I don't know. Going hunting or something.
Hunting?
Yeah.
For animals?
Yeah.
You want to shoot animals with arrows?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, to kill them.
But that's not archery. That's hunting. That's called bow hunting. That's what you wanted to do? Bow hunting?
Yeah, I saw it on TV.
Well, I don't really want to kill animals with arrows, so that's not going to happen. We can target shoot, Shelly.
It's not fun.
It's a lot of fun. You have to apply yourself.
Targets don't move.
Well, you know, Shelly, you haven't really hit one yet.
You should support me.
I do support you. I support. All right, forget it. Take your bracer off. We're not shooting anymore.
Okay.
Shelley removes the brace with complete indifference and ambles off along the side of a frozen pond. Nighttime. David drives up outside Noreen's house. His expression is troubled.
There's a chance I might be going to New York. A small chance. You think you'd like to come, maybe, if I go?
Yeah.
We can maybe go with Pop-Pop. He's got some tests.
Yeah.
Shelley gets out of the car and plods slowly up the path and through the front door. David watches her go as if his heart could break. He then turns and backs the car out of the driveway. Rather than driving off, however, he pulls over to the opposite curb and cuts the engine. He sits staring forlornly over at the house. A figure approaches the passenger window and leans down. It is Michael.
Hey. Hey, Mike.
You don't look real good, Dad. Are you okay?
Yeah.
What are you doing out here?
Just sitting here. Sometimes I just sit here, look at the house.
You park here sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes. I just like to see you guys. I see you playing guitar up there.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
You know Pop-Pop?
Yeah.
He's sick.
Mom said.
I was thinking about that too.
Why do you have a bow and arrow in there?
Oh, I was just out with Shelly. I'm not playing favorites. I just think we need to be together for a while.
Yeah, that's okay.
How's your program going?
Great.
Michael heads on towards the house. David, as if desperate to maintain the contact, winds down his window.
You're gonna get that camera if you keep it up.
Michael raises his thumb and smiles back. David continues staring after him.
Look at this house. Someone should be happy here. How did I fuck this up? Seriously. What if I remembered the tartar sauce? Would things be different? Would Robert die not thinking I'm a jerk off? Jerk fuck.
Don't forget the tartar sauce.
Call the order in, Irene, and quit busting my you-know-what, okay?
You always have. Listen to what I'm saying to you.
I heard you. Tartar sauce.
David is out in the cold on a shopping street.
Tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce. Tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce.
He stops behind a girl with a very pert bottom.
Man, I'd like to put my face in there. Right in there. Tartar sauce. My hips are cold. Tartar sauce. That's when you know it's cold. I like eating pussy. Tartar sauce. A lot of guys don't. Well, maybe they do. Maybe that's just black guys. Tartar sauce. What happened to the guy who was trying to go around the world in a balloon? Did he make it? I should put some espionage or stolen plutonium in my novel, Tartar Sauce. Spice it up, Neil Young. Fuck, it's cold. Neil Young. What? Why am I thinking about Neil Young? Neil Diamond, Neil. There's not a lot of famous Neils. Is this Wednesday? I wish I had two dicks. I thought the whole family was going to learn Spanish together this year. That never really happened. I haven't had a Spanish omelet in a long time. Here we go.
Crosses to the takeaway restaurant.
Anything else?
No.
Noreen rifles through the order.
Where is the tartar sauce?
They were out. They apologized. They were cool about it.
They were out?
They were out.
They were out of tartar sauce. I'm calling them.
Fuck, Noreen.
It's not about the tartar sauce. It's about you. You don't care!
I don't care about tartar sauce! I'm trying to make a living for this family. I got more things to think about and pressure. Tartar sauce? Fuck, Noreen, are you serious?
You're so selfish!
Michael and Shelley have resignedly left the table. He now plays a violent video. She lies in bed.
We both just think it's better for the kids.
David, sacrifice is... To get anything of value, you have to sacrifice.
I know that, Dad, but I think if we continue down this road, it's going to be too detrimental for the kids. It's just too hard.
Do you know that the harder thing to do and the right thing to do are usually the same thing? Nothing that has meaning is easy. Easy doesn't enter into grown-up life.
David emerges from his memories, still sitting in the car outside Noreen's house. A lone tree stands starkly on the frozen waterfront. The expanse of semi-solid bay spreads out below the high-rise skyline. Snow falls in the park.
I'm not comfortable with an 18-degree variance. Why even forecast?
It's a technical art, not a science. People get that.
Let's narrow it down, Tim.
Dave, it's random. We do our best. A day can have that variance.
Dave, phone call.
Tell him to take a message.
It's hello, America.
David's head swings round. A jet lands at an airport within sight of the New York skyline. David walks purposefully through the airport concourse. Shelley follows in his wake. Behind her comes Robert. A driver meets them at the pickup point and takes their luggage.
Can we shop here?
Sure. Where is that?
Bendel.
Women examine colourful clothes in a chicly designed store. David sits vacantly outside the fitting room. Shelley finally appears in a pair of revealingly tight trousers.
Dad.
You know what, let's go for a walk, take a break.
You don't like it?
No, maybe we'll come back later. We'll just take a break.
They walk together in Central Park.
So how's everything going?
Good.
How's school?
Good.
Dance school?
Good.
You know, when I was in school, I guess the hardest thing was how other kids can be a little mean. Names and stuff. Do you ever get called names?
Like what?
I don't know, like dummy if you miss a question, or camel toe.
Yeah, camel toe.
Do you know why?
Why what?
Why you get called camel toe?
Yeah.
Why, hon?
Because camel toes are tough. They can walk all over the desert and all the hot rocks. I'm tough.
That's right. It's because they're tough. You ready to shop again?
I think they make car tires out of camel toes.
Yeah, I think I heard that. I just think you're more grown up than that other stuff.
I don't think I like it.
Oh, but that was sort of kid stuff. I like this dress. It's New York style. Let me see.
Shelley emerges from the cubicle dressed in knee-length boots and a skirt suit in Prince of Wales check.
Hey.
You like it?
I like it, yeah. Do you like it?
Yeah, I think I do.
Do you feel comfortable in it? Because, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's comfy.
You look great. You look all grown up. Okay, change. Let's get some more.
Really?
Sure, and then we'll go show Pop-Pop some of this stuff.
Shelley smiles delightedly. David sits waiting in eager anticipation outside the cubicle as Shelley emerges wearing a succession of sophisticated New York fashion ensembles plus hats and accessories. David orchestrates and applauds what becomes a private show with Shelley as sole model. David collapses exhausted in the chair. They both pose jokily with hats and sunglasses. Robert stands gazing out of a hotel window. He turns as the door opens.
Papa! Check this out.
That's nice, huh?
I know. I got a lot more, too.
Dave.
How are you feeling?
I'm all right. Mike got arrested.
What?
He fucked his drug counselor's car up. They were on their way to a movie.
Oh. A movie?
Mike said he was trying to suck him off. Then Mike chucked a rug through his car's passenger window. What is this sucking and chucking rocks? I mean, what is this?
What did the guy say?
He said Mike tried to jack his wallet. What is this sucking and chucking and jacking of fucking up, son? He's 15 years old. What is this shit?
Where is he?
He's at home. What is this?
Fuck.
Shelley appears back in the doorway. Her smile fades as she notes the grim expressions of her father and grandfather. David stares at her and then turns to Robert.
You ready for the doctors? I think just what he said happened, happened. I think the guy was trying to make a move on him, and Mike got surprised and scared. Hun,
Will you get me a pop from the pop machine?
Can you get your pop later?
I'm trying to send Shelly away so she doesn't have to hear this.
This guy says that Mike tried to steal his wallet, and that's why they were fighting when the police came.
How is he?
He's scared. I don't know.
I can come home.
No, stay there and do your Hello America thing.
You act like...
What?
Like Mike's in trouble because I'm interviewing at Hello America. Give me a break!
I don't have any money.
David hands her his wallet. Robert emerges from a side room.
Russ is helping anyway.
That dildo's what?
It's been a big help, okay? You can stay there.
Fine, I'll stay here with Camel Toe. You just take care of stuff there. You take care of it.
Camel Toe? What are you talking about?
I had to find out how kids taunt Shelly about that. You're letting her get taunted. You're not paying attention to the way she goes to school.
I take care of everything around here.
Well, I bought her new stuff. I bought her a bunch of brand new stuff, and she told me all kinds of stuff,
don't
so...
Don't be such a dick. You have her for one weekend.
You know what, Noreen? Just... Fuck! Whatever. Let me talk to Mike.
He's sleeping, and don't talk to me like that.
More dildo, more fucking...
Listen, I have to go, Noreen. I'll talk to you soon.
Whatever.
I thought you were trying to improve matters with Noreen. If not, reconcile.
I am. What did Frost say?
He wants to speak to me in about 10 minutes. It was cold in there. Would you get me a coffee, Dave, so I can warm up?
Yeah, Dad.
Dave gazes as his father strolls back to the examination room. Dave stands vacuously rotating the food vending display while the coffee machine pours. He takes the coffee to the till.
Hi, 65.
He feels for his wallet.
Fuck. Hey.
Hello.
Pop-Pop went in?
Yeah.
Oh, great, yeah. He wanted a coffee. You have my wallet?
Shelley hands him the wallet. He looks in it and winces.
You only had a dollar. You should carry more money than that.
David sits on the plush brocaded sofa of their hotel room. His father sits across from him on an upright armchair. David appears at a loss for words.
Well, did he say whether any more therapy could...
No, he did. He didn't have a different opinion than Pritch. There's too large a plane. It's a no-go.
Did he say...
He said months.
You say a lot of months?
Well, what's a lot?
I don't know. Like 12?
Well, if he meant 12, he probably would have said a year, son. I think he meant 3 or 4.
Robert holds his son's gaze and then takes a sip from his whiskey glass. David stares at his father, seemingly desperate to disbelieve him. He looks down at the floor and then gets up and crosses to the window.
Well, you have a big day tomorrow. Hello America show.
Yeah.
Robert briefly squeezes his son's shoulder as he heads off into his bedroom. David remains looking bereft. An open hotel minibar. Above it, a television screen shows swirls of weather fronts in white against an ocean blue background. Shelley lies asleep in one of a pair of single beds. David sits glumly in a chair, inspecting the label of a miniature bourbon bottle. He puts the bottle, probably not his first, to his lips and downs the contents in one. He stares blankly ahead of him through the window. He lets the bottle fall from his fingers onto the thick pile of the carpet at his feet. Across the picture window there floats the absurdly optimistic face of a giant inflatable SpongeBob SquarePants. It would seem that this may be in David's imagination, as the following scene shows David, Noreen, Shelley and Michael aboard a carnival float waving at a cheering crowd. A giant blow-up SpongeBob drifts above their heads.
Gumbel gave them all a fresh start and an increase in salary to $980,000. $1,000 outside promotional fees, which puts Day well over $1 million a year.
That got his wife's ear, I bet.
You bet. That buys a lot of Facebook. Now everything's great.
David returns to the reality of his lonely vigil. His head drops back. The inanely grinning SpongeBob floats away, disappearing like the inanely grinning David Spritzel of Dave's own fantasy. The liquid crystal display of a radio alarm clock changes from 5:59 to 6. A gentle dawn light suffuses the room. David walks somewhat unsteadily through to the bathroom and struggles to focus as he blinks blearily at himself in the mirror. He goes to a window and pulls back the blinds. The sun is peeping up from behind serried ranks of pencil-thin skyscrapers. David blinks and sways as he takes in the view.
Hello, America.
What are your hobbies?
Writing. Archery.
And you don't have a degree in meteorology?
General communications.
Well, listen, we've seen a lot of your work in Chicago.
Okay.
We think you're great. Oh. Refreshing. We love the spritz snipper.
Great.
Why don't we run some blue screen and we'll do a walkthrough on the set?
Great.
Everybody, engineering recall is 3 a.m. for the precise promotion. Stage hands.
Here's your station. We'll run some screen. Give me a second to set it up.
Dave is left alone by the news desk. People bustle around as if getting ready for a transmission. He wanders over to the weather forecast station, narrowly avoiding a camera as it swings around to focus on the desk. A bank of lights flash on above his head. A camera rotates and gets him in its sights. David begins practicing his arm movements. He catches sight of Bryant Gumbel.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm waiting for Mark. I'm running some screen. Dave.
Bryant. Nervous?
No.
Sure?
Yeah.
Look, just a little bit nervous.
It's not nerves.
Other shit.
Yeah.
Gumbel salutes and walks off, leaving David bemused.
Mild in the northwest. As this high-pressure system gives way, we'll see warm temperatures in New Mexico.
I know it's not neurosurgery. Warm, moist air. But green screen's the one part of my job that's not really easy.
35 in New York with colder temperatures west of Michigan.
You need a sense of where put-ons will come from, and a pretty strong sense of scale. I've gotten real good at it. I felt everything went over pretty well.
Robert and Shelley wait for Dave on the snowy sidewalk.
So we'll let you know in a couple of days.
Okay. This is my father, Robert Spritzel, and my daughter. We're a little late for our plane, so we thought we'd leave from here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We kept you late.
That's cool.
So you've got the numbers?
Yes.
Oh, there's a built-in with Purina I forgot. 42,000.
Okay.
What's the built-in?
It's a compulsory endorsement if I'm offered the job.
Dog food.
Yeah,
pet products.
Dave doesn't own a pet.
Well, I have Jackson.
Jackson lives with your wife and kids.
This lands badly with the squeaky clean exec.
We'll let you know.
Dave stands rather forlornly on the sidewalk. Aboard the plane, Shelley and Robert sleep side by side. Across the gangway, David sits on his own, deep in thought. David gets out of a yellow cab. Noreen comes down the front driveway of her house towards him.
Russ is here.
Okay. Where's Mike?
Inside.
Dave?
Hi, Russ.
He's upstairs. He's still pretty upset about it.
Did he talk about it?
Yeah.
To you?
He's told us what happened. He was with his counselor, Don Bowden. I guess he was.
I don't really know why what happened next happened. He was talking about my son, and I was taking my gloves off.
He is upset right now. Apparently, they were going to a movie. What the fuck?
Why are you here?
What are you doing?
Why are you here?
I'm helping Noreen.
Why are you helping?
Dave. Son, Jesus.
A taxi drives through a busy street at night. In the rear sit David and his father.
Here's something that, if you want your father to think you're not a silly fuck, don't slap a guy across the face with a glove. Because if you do that, that's what he will think, unless you're a nobleman or something in the 19th century. Which I'm not.
Get inside, okay, Dad?
Yeah.
Dave stands grimacing slightly as his father goes indoors. His cab continues on through swirling snow down a wide downtown boulevard. It pulls up. Through the splatters of moisture on the window looms the McDonald's neon M. Dave stands alone in a lift. Two children run in at the last moment through the closing doors. The little boy runs his hands down the buttons, illuminating pretty well every level. He grins at David. David sits at his desk amid piles of drafts of his novel.
When my back's against the wall, I order a chink call girl, or I box some rounds with Richie the Puerto Rican southpaw at Clancy's gym. But tonight, Roy thought, once I smuggle this fucking plutonium out, I'm just gonna drink some scotch and hit the sack. Roy had picked up Oliver at his science lab, and there he snagged the vials. He stashed them in his computer case.
Dave presses the delete button on his computer, erasing the novel completely, and then leans back in his chair. He shoots at the outdoor public range. His arrows smash through a thick veneer of ice covering the straw targets. A light shines in the window of Robert's brownstone house.
My mom discovered an idea known as a living funeral in a book she read to help her with Robert dying.
David's mother sits at the desk in the window, thoughtfully writing. A waiter lays a table. Cars pull up and friends and family pour into where Robert is hosting a party.
It's where someone's family and friends gather like they might at the person's funeral. Only when the person's alive, so they can see everybody.
Dave, dressed only in his work suit, walks down the frozen range to collect his arrows. He walks across an iron footbridge, his quiver slung on his back and his bow in his hand. As he stashes his equipment in the boot of his car, a young man spots him and crosses the street.
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
Hey, what's the nipper?
What's that?
What's the nipper this week?
I don't know.
You don't know yet?
Come on, man.
What, I just asked you about the nipper?
Monday, okay, that's the, okay?
What's your problem?
It's February, man. It's cold. Fuck!
Fuck you then.
Fuck you! Do you know what variance is? You think you could pick out a day, a week ahead and give a realistic, you know? Did you know that?
Weather man!
God, fuck!
Dave picks up the McDonald's apple pie which has just caught him on the lapel and runs desperately after the car in which sits the culprit.
I have kids! I have to go see my kids! You put fucking pie shit on my coat! I have to see my kids with pie on me, man! Go see your kids with shit on you!
Calm down, man!
I have to see my family!
He smears the pie in the face of the car passenger. The driver speeds off, leaving David dangerously exposed amid multi-directional traffic. He takes the call on his phone.
Hello?
Hello, Dave?
What?
It's Mark Durson from Hello America.
Dave, still in his pie-stained coat, hurries through into the venue of Robert's living funeral. He searches around. Finally spotting Noreen, he crosses over to her. She clocks the pie stain, but sees no point in commenting.
Jelly looks nice.
We bought that in New York.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it. It's very nice.
Noreen, I got offered the show. Hello, America, with Bryant Gumbel.
Well, that's great. Are you gonna take it?
I'm thinking about it. It's a pretty substantial salary, and you know, the venue, it's big.
It's a pretty big salary jump, I guess.
$1.2 million all in, Noreen. Can't we think about that?
What?
What that kind of change could be like for everybody. Mike, Shelley, you know. If we thought about trying again.
Dave, I'm marrying Russ.
Dave's face remains set in a tragic mask of utter deflation and despair. He walks out into the snowy car park. Two men in overcoats and Russian hats stand smoking at the door and look up briefly as he trudges past. Dave flips out his car key fob and opens the boot of his car. His bow and arrows lie inside the boot. He stares down at them for a moment and then begins to remove his coat. He stands in the snowy park and aims an arrow at a large tree. He looses the arrow, which bounces off the tough bark. He knocks on a second, shakes his head as if to ward off tears, and draws the bow. This arrow penetrates the tree trunk. Russ emerges from the party to smoke a cigarette on the terrace nearby. Dave shoots a second arrow into the tree, and a third. Russ stands quietly smoking. Dave knocks on another arrow and then notices Russ. He looks grimly towards him. Russ smokes obliviously. In a direct line over to Russ's left, and at no greater distance than he is from the tree, Dave stands with his bow at the ready. He slowly turns so he is side on to Russ. He draws his bow and aims an arrow directly at him. Russ suddenly notices what is going on. He removes the cigarette from his mouth. His eyes widen.
Accuracy equals focusing on a point. Gravity pulls an inch a yard. You plane up. But you have to factor in wind, which is the most difficult part.
Russ, in Dave's sights, moves across the terrace nervously to where Robert, Noreen, and others are standing. Noreen. The group, dominated by Robert, turn as one to stare at Dave. He lowers his bow.
I had to go in anyway. It was time for my speech.
Dave heads quietly back towards his car. Robert turns to go back inside, an expression of deep perplexity in his eyes.
That's what I know about Robert Spritzel. Forbearance, charity, wisdom. There are too few like him. And now Robert's son, David.
Dave gets to his feet and moves through the crowded room to take the podium. He buttons his jacket and smooths his hair as he goes, but still looks slightly disheveled.
Good afternoon. Many of you came from long distances, and I know I speak for my mom and Noreen and my family, Mike and Shelley, when I say thank you. When I think of my dad, I think of Bob Seger's Like a Rock. And then the power went out.
The guests sip drinks in the gloom as staff pass among them with candlesticks. The lights come back on.
Then, when the lights came back on, in 40 minutes, everyone had pretty much forgotten that I was talking. And we never finished that part of the thing. So my speech was, when I think of my dad, I think of Bob Seger's Like a Rock. That's all I said at my dad's living funeral. Something about Bob Seger.
The room clears of guests, leaving Dave standing alone and as if beaten into submission by this final irony. A single tree stands starkly by the frozen waterfront. The surface of the water heaves, causing the thick layer of scales of ice to undulate. The Chicago skyline stands silently at the water's edge.
You've reached 272-7638. Please leave a message.
Dave. It's Mark Durson from Hello America. Can you give me a call back? I called a couple of times Friday, and I'm wondering why you haven't called me back. If I need to move down on my list, look, I need to know, okay? It's not Hello, you know, whatever, you know, Orlando. Look, I'm still jacked about you, Dave. I just need to hear from you. Give me a call.
David sits in his apartment. Opposite him on the sofa sits Michael. On a shelf behind Michael, a mobile buzzes.
Your phone's ringing.
I know.
Why aren't you getting it?
It's the Brian Gumbel thing.
So So why aren't you getting it?
Did you bring that stuff?
It's by the door.
Dave gets up wearily and moves towards the front door. As he passes, Michael gives him a wary sidelong glance.
You should get it.
Dave picks up a bag from the hall table. The red level indicator of a lift goes downwards from 32. Dave stands in the lift. He looks down at his lapel, which is still stained with pie.
Fuck. It was a McDonald's hot apple pie. They're not kidding. It was hot.
Onto the exposed and snow-covered top floor of a car park cruises Dave's black Volvo. He pulls over to park nose-on to the side balustrade. He sits for a moment, staring bleakly ahead. Then he takes a bundle of something and an SLR camera from the passenger seat, gets out and slams them onto the roof.
The other thing that gets to people, that leads to pies, I guess, are these catchphrases we're required to use to single the program out. It gets under people's skin. Spritz nipper.
Dave shadowboxes wildly.
But the whole thing about all of it, all the getting hit with stuff, the whole thing is who gets hit with a fucking pie anyway? Did anyone ever throw a pie at Thomas Jefferson or Buzz Aldrin? I doubt it. But this is like the ninth time I got clowns get hit with pies.
This realization seems to make Dave even more grimly determined. Up ahead, Don Bowden turns into the front steps of his house.
Hey! Here's your shit.
Dave sends the camera flying into Don's face and then lays into him. The two men fall back down the steps, Don landing painfully. Dave continues beating him.
I saw you buy this at the mall on North Avenue, and I'm telling the cops too, so you can cut your crap without mind jacking your wallet. He's just a kid. Dave! He looks grown, but he's just a kid. You fucking asshole!
Dave slams out through the gate.
I mean, I'll bet no one ever threw a pie at, like, Harriet Tubman, the founder of the Underground Railroad. I'll bet you $1 million.
Don staggers out to retrieve his glasses. In the garish, plasticated surroundings of a Burger King, Dave sits pensively at a table. His hands are grazed and bloody. An overweight woman takes a huge bite from her burger. An elegantly bearded, slim, elderly African-American looks around quizzically. Two ordinary Joes quietly chew and slurp.
The first time I was struck with something, a chicken breast from Kenny Rogers, I was standing next to a garbage pail. I thought it might have been an accident that they were throwing it out. The second time, it hit me square on the chin. A soft taco, then pop, a falafel, McNuggets, always fast food, shit people would rather throw out than finish. It's easy, it tastes all right, but it doesn't really provide you any nourishment. I'm fast food.
Hey.
Michael, carrying a tray of food, joins his father at the table.
Did you see him?
Yeah.
Am I gonna get in trouble? I didn't do anything.
You're not in trouble. I took care of it. I got on him. I let him know we're not messing around. I wailed on him.
What?
Caught him one clean one for sure, on the forehead, and then I fucking wailed on him.
Seriously?
He's not gonna say you stole anything. You're not in trouble.
Michael seems delighted. He takes a bite of something deeply fried. David eyes the food suspiciously.
What do you mean? Corn dog.
Michael continues to chew his corn dog and smile impishly. Dave somewhat laboriously drags his chair round and lays his right arm across his son's shoulder. He stares straight ahead as he delivers his message.
You're a kid, Mike. Fuck.
I'm not a kid.
You are a kid. Don't put yourself in grown-up situations again until you're a grown-up.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Do you want me to get you a corn dog?
What? No.
What do you want?
Nothing.
Michael, unsure quite what to do, reaches for his fries. David stays still, his arm around his boy. Michael smiles again. Dave walks on the sidewalk and up to the entrance of his building. Robert pulls up in a car and leans across to call out of the window.
Weatherman!
Dave has ducked and winced before he realizes who it is. He crosses to the car, gets in and turns eagerly to Robert.
Hey.
Hi.
Are you all right?
Yeah. I just wanted you to...
What?
Robert turns on the stereo.
Didn't have a care, working for peanuts, not a dime to spare, but I was leaning solid everywhere, like a rock.
I don't really get it. My hands were steady, following it?
My eyes were clear and bright.
It was just to lead up to other things I wanted to say.
My steps were quick and light.
Here's the part.
And I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock.
I want to talk about that part, about you.
Like a rock.
Just like you.
I was strong as I could be, like a rock. Nothing ever got to me.
I got the job.
Like a rock.
New York? I was something to see. That's terrific. That's a remarkable like a income. There's more money than I ever made, that salary.
Yeah.
That's quite an American accomplishment.
Thanks.
Are you okay?
I can't knuckle down. Noreen's marrying Russ. There's nothing to knuckle down on, so I can't fucking knuckle down.
Your hand.
I just saw Mike's counselor.
Mike mentioned that you were gonna fix his business up. He's in no trouble. Good job.
Dave turns to Robert in wide-eyed surprise at these words.
Your hand okay?
That's okay.
You certain?
Don't worry.
You always worry about your kids. No matter how old. There's always looking after.
Dave, clearly distressed still, stares ahead. Robert looks away, then, seemingly troubled by a thought, turns his eyes back towards his son.
I read your book.
I was gonna do some more work on it, then I chucked it.
You chucked it?
Garbage.
It's just what I do, David. I've practiced and I've gotten good. Like you in the weather business.
But I don't predict it. Nobody does, because it's just wind. It's wind. It blows all over the place. What the fuck? I have to go to work.
David. This shit life. We must chuck some things. We must chuck them. In this shit life.
Dave stares through his tears. Robert breaks into a strange and unaccustomed smile.
There's always looking after. You have time.
Thanks.
David gets out of the car. His father and he exchange a look through the glass, and then Robert pulls away, leaving Dave standing alone and exposed on the curbside. The outdoor archery range at Bolingbroke stands like a cemetery, abandoned in the wintry mist. Denuded trees loom above the targets and the strange array of model game, some of which represent only the head and forequarters, some the hindquarters of the animal. Close to, with their multiple arrow holes, the models have the mournful quality of abandoned and mutilated children's toys. Snowmelt drips onto the silent muzzle of an imitation deer. Water drips down onto the straw bosses with their tattered paper targets. Sleet falls in sheets.
Pretty soon after Robert's living funeral, we had his real one.
Amid marble monuments, two men holding umbrellas stand in the pouring rain. They move across to an enormous line of black funeral cars. Rain pelts on the roof of one car. One of the men approaches and knocks on the window. Dave and his mother in the rear of the car turn as if shocked. Dave nods. The doors of the long line of cars open as one, and dark-suited undertakers get out, unfurling large umbrellas as they come. Black-shod feet step down from the cars into the streams of rainwater. A tide of people move from the roadway onto the grass. Dave stops, his attention drawn to a vase of white flowers which has been knocked off a gravestone. The blooms are scattered and bruised by the rain. Shelley, in a hooded waterproof, stops in front of her father.
I'm sorry for your loss.
That's a lovely thing to say to me. Where'd you hear that?
His friends.
They look towards the grave. Michael walks up.
Hey. I'm glad one of you brought an umbrella.
I had a feeling it was going to rain today.
You're not going to take my job, are you?
No, I'm going to be a cameraman for Monday Night Football. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Michael appreciates the approval.
There are a great many of Robert's friends here, even in winter. I think it's because Robert was unusual. I think that's what brought so many of you out. A loving husband and father for 40 years, and a good friend to some of you for longer. I'm sure that's why we appreciated and loved Robert. He was excellent, selfless, resolute.
I remember once imagining what my life would be like, what I'd be like. I pictured having all these qualities, strong, positive qualities that people could pick up on from across a room. But as time passed, few ever became any qualities I actually had. And all the possibilities I faced and the sorts of people I could be, all of them got reduced every year to fewer and fewer until finally they got reduced to one, to who I am.
Dave walks through a city in a shower of snow. He stops.
And that's who I am. The weatherman.
Dave turns from where he has been standing on the corner of a deserted street and walks out onto a zebra crossing. He arrives, still in his overcoat, in front of the weatherman's vivid green screen. He turns to camera as if slightly bemused. He stands alone in the darkened studio. Walking away from the green screen, he goes into the deserted newsroom. He stands by the water cooler. He finishes his drink of water and decisively crushes the cone-shaped paper cup. He throws it into the bin and walks away.
But first, Dave Spritz has a check of our national weather, Dave. Well, thanks, Bryant. Well, it feels like spring if you're in the Northeast. Is it going to last? Let's take a look. We've got a warm weather system to thank for these high temperatures.
Mike, you ready for school? 60, Wes?
New York. Let's go, guys.
Warmer in D.C. down south. 79 in Atlanta with a high of 84 in Miami.
You're going to get it. Bye, Shelly. Bye, Mom.
That's your national weather. I'll be back with your local focus at the bottom of the hour.
Noreen looks at the TV screen as she clears the breakfast things. In Central Park, Dave shoots at one of the bank of targets. Another man stands shooting at a slight distance. Dave's arrows are all now solidly in the center. He walks towards the target and looks with satisfaction at the grouping.
Hey, are you Dave Spritz?
Yeah.
Can I get your autograph?
Sure.
So, it's gonna rain today?
Who knows?
The punter looks confused. Dave walks through the streets with his bow on his shoulder.
Hey, hello, America.
I've been doing the show for a few months. People don't throw things at me anymore. Maybe because I carry a bow around. I don't know.
In a parade, Dave stands with Bryant Gumbel, waving beneath a giant SpongeBob.
I go back to Chicago weekends, keep it steady with Mike and Shelley. Come back, do the weather. So, forecast? Come on. Another man's with my family. Things didn't work out the way I predicted. Accepting that's not easy. But easy doesn't enter into grown-up life. I'll take this American accomplishment. That's where I live. Behind Fire Brigade 47. Okay. But in front of SpongeBob. Hello, America.
The end.